This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Shamla Ganesan. Tonight, what else but the outcome of the Johor elections?
First, we look into what this latest loss means for the opposition and what they need to do to regroup. Then, how do parties who battle it out at the state level function when they are in the federal government together?
All of which to say, tell us, what do you want to see from the opposition moving forward? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and I think what we can do to start off is perhaps give you a quick rundown of what happened over the weekend, basically. So in the Johor state elections, Barisan Nasional won with a supermajority. That's 40 seats in the 56-seat assembly, which surpassed their initial target for a two-thirds majority. And Pakatan Harapan won 12 seats. So of that, DAP took 10, PKR won, Amanah won, but Ikatan Nasional secured 3, MUDA won 1. And all of this, it's important for you to know, I think, that the voter turnout was actually very low. It was 54.92%, which was also well below the target for the EC.
A number of things, I think, that have come to be a sort of point of conversation with this. The fact that this is the first time Undi 18 has been in effect for an election. The fact that MUDA, this was their first proper election as well. And all of the drama leading up to the election as well, in terms of whether the opposition was going to run as a bloc, who was going to, you know, whose logo was going to be used, and all of these things. Some reasons that have been put forward for why the opposition didn't do as well as they might have wanted to, really. Although I'm not sure whether this was necessarily a surprise for many people. They talked about it being a crowded playing field. The fact that they keep putting out narratives that perhaps are not resonating with voters. Leadership is one that's come up a lot in terms of perhaps the opposition just needs new leaders, a fresh outlook. Yeah, so I think ahead of the general election, some amount of soul searching and regrouping is something that's being called for quite strongly.
Yeah, it's also worth saying that when we say opposition now, I mean, we could mean any number of things, right? You can be talking about any number of coalitions and parties. A lot of what you were referring to there, I think, is specific to Pakatan Harapan. Issue with the logo, the stuff about seat negotiations and who is going to get what and what it all means. But the leadership struggles across the board. So, for example, in a press conference, Pakatan National Chairman Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, who you may also remember was kind of the election whip previously, stated that he was willing to resign from his post following these results. We are also seeing Dr. Azmi Hassan, for example, who is a senior fellow at the Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research, saying that Bersatu needs to reevaluate its choice of allies, which, I mean, we can talk about later on. We're also seeing Datuk Dr. Muhammad Puat Zarkashi, UMNO Supreme Council member, basically asking for Bersatu cabinet members to resign and saying, well, rather harsh things in a Facebook post, including the fact that the people of Johor do not believe that the Ikatan National Chairman cares for them. Shamila, I will leave it to you, though, to talk about the zeros that came by way of Pejuang, for example.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I'm not sure who necessarily was the most surprised by this, but the fact that Pejuang, which is, of course, led by Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, didn't make any headway. In fact, talk of getting, not getting the deposit back is something that lots of people are talking about, leading a lot of people to say, has the party become irrelevant? And so I think that pretty much wraps up the opposition, as it were, the playing field, and brings up a lot of questions of what next, right? Because one thing that has become quite strong, at least in terms of the BN camp, is a call for dissolving parliament. There was a video going around where people were basically chanting Bubar Parliament, even though our PM isn't necessarily a large proponent of this. It is something that's intensifying because of what we've seen, not just in Johor now, but what we saw before this in Malacca and so on.
That's the thing. Even among the winners, right, the desire for what should happen next is not clear cut. So, while not a surprise, I think it leaves us in a a place where we can discuss at least what possible moves might be coming up for both parties, or rather for all the parties. I really cannot say both anymore. There's like a zillion of them. So we did, however, want to focus on the opposition because this is now the third state election and they have not done well. I think I can say that quite simply and plainly. They really have not done well. So moving forward, what do you want to see from the opposition? How do you want them to change or adapt to this? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, to talk about that very thing, the opposition, we'll be joined by Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the Asia Research Institute Malaysia at the University of Nottingham. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are talking today about the outcome of the Johor elections, which I think, you know, we can say broadly speaking was not a great showing for the opposition, who are going to be the focus of the first part of our show. We'd also like to hear from you. What do you want to see from the opposition on the back of this loss, but also the two previous other state election losses? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this, Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the Asia Research Institute Malaysia at the University of Nottingham. Bridget, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Good evening.
So we are going to talk about the opposition in some detail, but let's start with the winners. So BN, the margins by which they succeeded, it's 40 out of 56 seats, a supermajority. What do you think were the factors behind this victory?
Well, I think we must start with the fact that they ran a better campaign. They had a very clear narrative. They were effective in mobilizing their traditional base, and that involved also working and strengthening MIC and MCA. I also think that the fact that the contest itself had multiple players, this worked to the advantage of the one that was strongest, which was BN. Interestingly enough, you know, we do see a kind of reconfigured opposition with Perikatan Nasional coming in, winning second in 25 seats and actually winning 24% of the vote. And this helped in some cases, it challenged BN, but in other places it helped BN in that context. And of course, also there are systemic factors that we are well known. But I think ultimately, you had a chief minister incumbent at that time who was popular, and you had the focus on the issues of the campaign, on bread and butter issues, that things people could relate to. And that's why they won.
Now, it isn't necessarily a surprise that the opposition wasn't going to do very well. Now that it's happened, we're seeing multiple reasons being put forward, right? Splitting votes, a lack of unity, a weak narrative. What would you say were the main issues?
Well, I think everybody knew these issues going into the campaign. I think let's start with some things that people don't really talk about. Number one is that I think four parties in Harapan and the opposition, and even PN to a certain degree, what we see is they're not used to running a state election. So what we didn't see is leadership in Johor, and we saw a lack of a kind of sense of the campaign, what was going to happen for Johorians. And so the campaign was on national issues as opposed to on issues at the local level. But I also think the problems have to do with the opposition themselves, and people have talked a lot about what those issues are. I think you have to start with the problem of leadership, and that ultimately it's about who you choose as candidates, what sort of narrative, how you work together. All of those things weren't happening on the ground to the degree that they had happened in the past. And they had, in fact, had deteriorated in the last two states elections, both in Malacca and Johor. We saw a kind of dynamic that everybody was out for their own. There was more inter-Pakatan Harapan cooperation, with PKR running its own show in that context. So a lack of cooperation. And of course, the third sort of thing I would speak to is that they had no narrative. They had no meaningful messages that they could get across. In fact, they were constantly on the defensive. You can't win a campaign when you're defending your period in government that happened, over 2 years ago, as opposed to focusing on the issues of here and now that people want to hear from you. And people didn't come back to vote, and people were less enthusiastic. They still did well. I mean, I think that, to say that they didn't garner a certain share of the vote, and others is still important. But the fact of the matter is their support has has eroded considerably. And I think a lot of this, unfortunately, with Pakatan Harapan has been self-inflicted.
So you mentioned the issue of leadership as well as PKR going their own way. And the losing streak that PKR is on has seen people continuing, I think, to question the party's leadership. What does all this say about where they stand and Anwar Ibrahim's ability to still lead the opposition?
Let's take each of those elements separately. So in the case of Anwar, right, I think, you know, Anwar's strength was always that he could bridge people together. He could solve problems. But now he is actually the reason for the divide. So there are people who would like for him to leave, and he's holding on. And then, and I think there are others that, you know, still want him, but the problem is they don't see him providing a message, a direction, and others. And I think, you know, this, the focus on things like the logo, who cares about a logo? They care about what are going on the ground in terms of the messaging. And I think that this, you know, this was a very, in Johor was, I think, it signaled to the electorate that they are, they're divided. You know, one of the stories of a voter that I heard on the ground is that, you know, they said, oh, there's no Harapan in my constituency. And I said, really? I said, PKR is contesting me here. And they said, oh, you PKR is Harapan? So this kind of indicates the fact that there was not even a kind of joint messaging of who to support and how to support them on the ground. And keep in mind that there are a lot of younger voters that are not as used to the different sets of logos and others. But this logo decision basically showed a coalition divided. On terms of how they're being perceived, you know, there were no clear messages. It seems to be very ad hoc. And I think, you know, what is important to recognize is that the electorate has changed. So many people, what they associate with Anwar Ibrahim are the period of the time of the last few years, which is a period where he was fighting with Mahathir. He was making political deals. They don't associate with him with reformasi or pushing and challenging the status quo. They see him as part of the status quo. You know, they see him sitting down when the budget decision has been made. And they also see him as part of the instability that is actually that we saw during that period of time. And so therefore, people want to move away from that. They don't want to focus on the past. They want to focus on the present and the future. And Anwar Ibrahim doesn't have that same comparative advantage that he had in the past.
Now, DAP really is in some ways the stalwart here, right? They hold 10 out of the 12 seats that that Pakatan Harapan won. Do you see this impacting the dynamics within Pakatan moving forward?
Look, Cole, you know, any relationship, you know, is a product of all of its partners. And I think it's fair to say that you can't take the single one out without acknowledging the challenges of the other. All right. And you know, I think there's often a lot of blame gaming on both others and sensitivities. You know, the trust relationship among some of the partners in Harapan has really eroded. And you could see that, you know, they don't want to work with each other the way that they did it before. And DAP is a challenge for a number of reasons. Number one, you know, that they are, people see them as being a lightning rod for part of the electorate, particularly the Malay electorate, where Harapan is losing the most political support. And then they also see that DAP making decisions without consultation, such as they feel many of the partners feel that they were pressured into the memorandum of understanding. And when comments happen about that during the Johor campaign without consultation, again, it kind of brings back the same sense of wounds. And then you have a sense that they are stronger electorally because the Harapan base has traditionally been the base that they have had. And so this creates a sense of anxiety and a sense of concern about the imbalance within the coalition, which contributes to these kind of negative forces that are pushing the coalition towards, I think, towards breaking up if it continues this type of trajectory. And I think, you know, some of that is DAP's responsibility, and some of that is the way that it is a situation of the politics of Malaysia, where things are being perceived in largely through ethnic lenses and different ethnic bases, which don't look at things from a different way. And they haven't, and the, and Harapan is still very much caught up in the kind of the politics of the past, as opposed to looking at Malaysian electorate from a multiple sets of lenses in order for it to be able to engage in different ways.
So MUDA secured one seat. What does this say about the party as a credible player moving forward?
Well, I think, you know, one thing about MUDA's success in Johor is that it wasn't just about one seat. It's that they didn't lose their deposit on all the other seats, and they made inroads. I would say that it was a highly respectable maiden performance from a perspective of someone on the ground. You know, it was the only campaign that you felt positivity. You know, that you felt enthusiasm. And I visited all the campaigns, and I, yes, there were serious weaknesses, machinery, messaging, resources. These were very clear on the ground. But at the same time, there was a lot more, there was a lot of enthusiasm. But I think MUDA has some very difficult issues to face. You know, they do, and this is something the opposition as a whole, what sort of strategic alliances are going to be important? What type, is it going to be a similar type of coalition arrangement, non-PAC arrangement? You know, is MUDA want to be an arm of Harapan, which I don't think it does, but at the same time, it also is being perceived as being part of that in that context. And of course, MUDA challenges PKR because it is a multi-ethnic party, of which PKR traditionally has been. And so I think, you know, we did see the only real cooperation that happened in the Johor campaign was between MUDA and Harapan. And we did see MUDA candidates moving in NDP areas and vice versa in that context, in the Mana areas as well. And I think that there was that particular element of cooperation. MUDA, I think, you know, has some difficult choices ahead, but it is something that comes out of the campaign with a kind of new focus. But their own messaging needs to be much clearer, because they were part of the lack of a clear political narrative in the campaign.
So we referenced PKR's losing streak earlier, but it does feel like the opposition as a whole has been on the back foot for some time now. At the moment, what is the general perception around the opposition and their direction?
Well, I think Johor has had a bit more of an impact than Malacca did. You know, Malacca was like, oh, it's Malacca, which of course was disrespectful to Malacca and the fact that, you know, this, keep in mind, it's four state elections that they have lost, not three, right? Sabah, Malacca, Sarawak, and Johor, right, in that context. So it is four. I think that we can see more internal reflection. I think that, you know, they also can see that there is a kind of, you know, a recognition that they need to address their leadership issues, the cooperation, their messaging. And I think public perceptions of the opposition are continued frustration. There are, you know, what we can see that voters is the most interesting thing, is that voters are just turning to an alternative opposition. And that was Partai Nasional, which did very well. And in fact, they cut in the most to Harapan's support base in that context. And I think we are going to see a situation that they need to have a strategy, that a strategy that has to deal with, you know, new leadership, focusing on the conditions of the here and now, you know, moving away from deal making and focusing on problem solving. And I think this involves significant rebranding and listening to the electorate. You know, if they choose to not listen to the electorate, then you lose. And this is the pattern so far.
We have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to try and squeeze in a couple of questions. So do you see Pakatan Harapan staying together?
Under its current affiliation and the current under its current leadership, no. Unless Anwar Ibrahim chooses to step aside. And I think it's not just leadership change in PKR. I think it's leadership change across political parties. Unless there are shifts in the leadership, I think that we're going to see a kind of a situation where you're in a bad marriage. People are staying in it for what they think is that for the parents, not for the children and not for the future. And I think that in this dynamic, you know, it is, you can see it, there is already separation. You know, the logo example is people living in a different room, you know, in that circumstances. And I think that, you know, the realities of distrust and others. But I also recognize that one of the most important lessons of Johor is that if the opposition is disunited, it doesn't win and it loses support. And I think it's a question of whether or not the opposition leaders and its are going to be able to listen to the lessons and to take them and actually do something about it. You know, it's important to recognize that UMNO got its act together within a short period of time, and it's back into power into multiple governments. I think that there's a lot to be learned from actually listening to the electorate.
Bridget, as always, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Most welcome. Have a good evening.
You too. That was Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the Asia Research Institute Malaysia, the University of Nottingham, talking to us about the opposition's showing in Johor. We'd like to hear from you. What do you want to see from the opposition moving forward? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:39 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the Johor elections, which saw Barisan Nasional winning a supermajority, 40 seats in the 56-seat assembly, and Pakatan Harapan winning 12, but Ikatan Nasional 3, MUDA 1. There was also not a great voter turnout. So we started off our show by looking at what went right for BN and also wrong for the opposition. And we're asking you, what do you want to see from the opposition, right, moving forward as we're likely heading into GE? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And now for the second half of our show, we want to instead look at the various parties that make up the federal government, but that aren't necessarily united when it comes to running during an election period, right? And this is where we're at, Sharmila. We cannot even say government and opposition. This is where we're at. We're going to be examining basically this block of parties. And joining us to do this is Ben Sufian, Program Director at Merdeka Center. Ben, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, what is the relationship between the parties that are involved in the federal government, and how has that been affected by the outcome of the Johor election?
Well, the relationship between Perikatan Nasional and also Barisan Nasional, I think, is a bit tenuous right now, in the sense that they know that the days are numbered, that at some point in time, the parliament is going to be dissolved and elections are going to be called. So I think for Perikatan Nasional, it is there in order to make good on the positions that they have and try to offer themselves to the members of the public. So there is a bit of a, how shall we say, competition going on, where Perikatan Nasional is definitely going to be a competitor for Barisan Nasional when elections are held, like what has happened in Johor. But at this point in time, there is definitely a kind of ring fence between their role in government and their politicking on the ground. It has somewhat helped that due to COVID, there's restrictions in terms of campaign methods and campaign approaches. And so it has been more civil than what we've used to see prior to the COVID era. So the relationship is a bit testy. It's not great, but things somehow can muddle along and they can relate to one another.
You touched on this briefly just now, but I wanted you to expand on how you see this carrying forward as we go into GE15.
Yeah, I think it's going to be increasingly challenging as we go into as we approach GE15, because once GE15 is called, Barisan Nasional is going to be the ruling party, so they will have incumbency. And the other parties, like Perikatan, is going to be in the opposition. So I'm not quite sure in terms of how the caretaker government is going to be formed or how it's going to operate, because they are from competing parties. But one does get a sense that Perikatan Nasional, I think, is quite clear that they are going to contest as an opposition because the Prime Minister is from Barisan Nasional and the cabinet will be dissolved once the parliament is dissolved. So they will be fighting from the trenches as an opposition party.
We're going to pick that up in just a bit, but Puat Zakashi, UMNO Supreme Council member, has called for Bersatu cabinet members to resign from the federal government following on the results from Johor and also, I think, basically what was said during the campaigning period. What do you make of this, and is it likely to happen?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen so easily. I think this statement by Puan Zaid Kashi, you know, represents the hardcore base of the party that actually wants to see the party move into general election mode as quickly as possible and remove the other coalition partners and you know, maintain the Barisan Nasional lineup, you know, unadulterated, unmixed with other parties. That's actually not possible right now because Perikatan Nasional, along with the component parties in there, you know, they have something like 30 to 40, nearly 50 MPs. And so if Perikatan Nasional were to leave the coalition, then the government would collapse. So I think it represents the core view of the party stalwarts in UMNO. It may not transpire very easily. It also reflects the gap between the hardcore base of the party and that of the Prime Minister, who still wants to try and keep things under control, keep things manageable and moderated until he's ready to call for a general election.
Yes, and that's actually what I wanted to pick up on, right? Because these results have intensified that call for an early general election. Do you see Ismail Sabri giving in to these calls?
I somehow, you know, doubt that he has the ability to withstand the pressure from the party because, you know, he is not the leader, not the party president. And within the UMNO system, there's a lot of power residing in the office of the party president. And I think it's relatively clear that at some point soon, perhaps even sometime this coming week in the UMNO General Assembly, the president or the rest of the party delegates are going to press the Prime Minister to dissolve Parliament quickly. So, going by how he has had to acquiesce to the requests from the party, such as the Malacca state election, the recent Johor state election, I find it very hard to imagine for Ismail Sabri to be able to withstand the pressure from his party because he doesn't completely call all the shots. And he still needs the support of the party president to be re-nominated as a candidate, let alone as a prime minister candidate.
On the line with us today is Ben Sufian, Program Director at Merdeka Centre. We're going to continue our conversation about where things stand with the various coalitions, you know, Perikatan Nasional, Muafakat Nasional, all these various parties. We'd like to hear from you, though. We started off our show today about the Johor State elections by looking at what happened with the opposition. And we want to hear from you. What would you like to see from the opposition moving forward? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It is just about 6:47 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the outcome of the Johor State election, focusing now on not just UMNO, but really Bersatu, PAS, all the various other parties, right? And doing that with us is Ben Sufian, Program Director at Merdeka Centre. So Ben, we left off talking about the UMNO General Assembly and what might come from that. Let's look at some of the major names making moves, right? There's Ismail Sabri, there's Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, Najib Razak, but also Muhyiddin Yassin. Where do they each enter the picture and what might they be pushing for in the coming weeks and months?
Well, I think the clear you know, individual that's orchestrating and setting the tempo for the political momentum within UMNO moving forward is basically Zahid Hamidi and Najib Razak. And Najib was playing a very instrumental role as the chief campaigner for Barisan Nasional during the Johor State elections. And notwithstanding the criticisms by various opposition figures and parties towards him, he's been able to turn that around and deliver a victory to the party. And so that, I think, in some ways, has strengthened his position within the party and also his standing amongst the delegates that are going to meet in the annual general meeting. And so if we look at the body language and how things have played out over Saturday night as Barisan Nasional declared victory, one can sort of see that the Prime Minister is somewhat you know, shunted a bit to the background, partly because, you know, as a prime minister, he has not played a very strong role in the campaign, in part because he wanted to maintain stability in the cabinet. So he has not taken a very outsized role in the political campaigning. And so that, I think, in some ways puts him at odds with the delegates and the grassroots of the party who see the victory in Johor as a momentum for them to move forward and take back the power that they lost in 2018. Other key individuals, I think, in this equation are people like Muhyiddin Yassin. You know, of course, Perikatan Nasional didn't do so well in the election. And I think we know the reason why. In this, because you know they can only capture a portion of the support, not the length and breadth of the electorate. But in some places, you know, Muhyiddin Yassin's party performance have actually shown that not all of the Malay voters have come back to Barisan Nasional, and that in most cases, Barisan Nasional won the state with a thumping majority because the Malay votes were split three ways, as it did in 2018, but this time benefiting UMNO.
Are Muafakat Nasional and Perikatan Nasional still relevant coalitions to the public at this point?
Well, I think Muafakat Nasional is dead in the water, in part because I think with the psychological boost that UMNO has gained from Malacca and Johor, as well as the newfound confidence that the party now has in its leaders, I don't think they need PAS acting as a support, as a crutch, in order to boost them in future elections. In fact, they might have the confidence to feel that they can take on PAS and Perikatan Nasional. And I think this is an opportunity for them to remove all of these additional parties, coalition partners, so that UMNO and Barisan Nasional can come back and rule by themselves, perhaps in partnership with the Sabah or Sarawak party in the future. But Perikatan Nasional, you know, I think we can't be too quick to dismiss. Yes, on paper, Perikatan Nasional only captured three seats, but they achieved a sizable chunk of the Malay support. They took a whole lot of Malay voters from Pakatan Harapan, and they absorbed some of the Malay voters from UMNO and the new voters as well. So it's quite clear that, you know, Perikatan Nasional, PAS and Bersatu has emerged as a kind of alternative third force, particularly for the Malay ground. So now, the big question mark is, as we approach general election, what will the leaders of Perikatan Nasional and the other opposition parties in Pakatan Harapan do? You know, if they continue to be apart, they probably will not be able to take federal power. But big question mark is whether they can overcome the perceived wrongs, the slights, and also the betrayals that has happened since the Sheraton move, whether that is going to prevent them from coming together in facing Barisan Nasional in the general election.
What kinds of permutations might we see in terms of who aligns with who, right, in order to not split votes, particularly, I think, the Malay vote?
Yeah, I think if we look at the configuration, you know, Perikatan Nasional has to find a way to have an electoral pact, at least, with parties like PKR. Parties like PKR, I think, is really in deep trouble, even though they don't care to, they don't want to openly admit it. PKR lost a huge chunk of the Malay support. In Johor, in 2018, they actually attained about 36% of the Malay votes. I think over last weekend, they have lost, I think, more than 20%, nearly two-thirds of the Malay voters that voted for Pakatan Harapan in 2018, I think, went to vote for Perikatan Nasional. So there is a need for them to come back and figure a new way to at least have an electoral pact with Bersatu so that they can reduce the overlaps and maximize the number of votes that they can get. That's, I think, the first part. The second part is for them to assuage coalition partners like the DAP and Amanah about such a cooperation. And likewise for Bersatu, you know, they also have this big task of convincing parties like PAS on the need to have an electoral pact, because I think both coalition, particularly PAS as well as DAP, are very loath to have the impression that they are having a kind of deal, because they can't explain that to their supporters, and UMNO is going to needle them on that kind of issues with the electorate, particularly the Malay electorate, in an election.
Ben, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, I would like to, I think for opposition supporters and the leaders of the opposition parties, I think they need to move beyond rhetoric and I think look squarely at how this election has come across. In my view, you know, it's one thing to clamor for the change of leaders and all that. But it's only effective if the leaders that come in after them have the big ability to make all these changes. It takes a big person to do these things, to actually humbly admit to the public, like, look, we were wrong. You know, we were wrong to have broken up the last coalition. We were wrong to do this. And now we've learned our lesson. We want to come back. These are very, very, I think, big things. But without having the ability to do that, I think they will be staring at oblivion for the remaining 5 years. That's one. I think for the supporters as well, I think, you know, I'm looking at social media, particularly Twitter, quite a large number of opposition supporters are still very angry They believe that they lost the election because they were betrayed by all these people who joined and formed another coalition, and that they would rather lose and be principled rather than, betray those principles and try to win election. So I think people have to decide what it is that they want to do with their time, with the efforts of others. Because without a stronger narrative about fixing the country and addressing the problems of the rakyat, people are not going to come out to vote. And this election is quite clear. Without a strong overarching narrative, only the hardcore voters of Barisan Nasional came out in large numbers. Many of the supporters of Pakatan Harapan didn't come out to vote. So it's quite evident. So without a strong narrative and a strong, compelling reason, they're not able to excite their base to come out to vote in GE 15.
Ben, thanks for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
That was Ben Sufian, Program Director at Merdeka Centre, talking to us about basically I don't know how to describe this block of parties, right? We started off the show talking about the opposition, and now we're talking about basically the people who are in federal government and yet fight it out at the state level. And we just wanted to talk about the various dynamics and relationships involved in that. We've been asking you for your thoughts, and we have a lot of messages.
Katrina says, when Pakatan Harapan won years ago, for a moment I was hopeful because I saw a new direction for our political scene, a government that has proper structure with a manifesto as guidance, the willingness to let someone else lead instead of everyone wanting to be PM, ministers who are elected based on skill, representatives of all races and gender. If Sheraton had happened differently, where the disagreement was solved internally and quietly, a united front in announcing the successor, perhaps my hope might still be there.
Yeah, I hear you, Katrina, on basically all of that, right? I also think that if Sheraton had happened differently, we wouldn't be calling it Sheraton because we wouldn't know where they met. So, you know, and that just speaks to the level of public disagreement or how dramatic that all was. We have this from Sharun, which I really wanted to read because I think it captures a certain sentiment. Sharun says, being a Malay, it's clear whoever can control DAP, like UMNO with MCA, will win the next election. And I think that that's a really interesting point because it gets at exactly what our first guest Bridget Welsh was talking about in terms of how DAP is perceived as a sort of lightning rod for race and the perceptions surrounding who they are and what they are as a party.
Yes, and I think that is a problem. Now, whether you agree or not, I think the perception can often go such a long way, right? And perception alongside even use of the word control indicates something to be feared or to be held at bay in a particular way. And I think that's a narrative that is harmful in so many ways.
To be honest, even the direct comparison of DAP to MCA is problematic.
Yes.
So, you know, just to say there's a difference between being a race-based party and not, but that speaks to that perception. The other part of it, of course, is that PKR used to be able to have more sway over the narrative because of the number of seats, but DAP has actually held that larger number, is in Johor holding that larger number. So I think when we talk about control and the ways in which that's perceived and the difference in seat allocation, all those things are very crucial and it's not the same for those reasons. We also have Munif saying the opposition only defeated UMNO as one united front during the last GE. I don't know what they expected battling UMNO all splintered like that. It's literally math. I guess the hunger for power and the need for infighting overcomes basic smarts.
The united front, right? The thing is also, I agree with Munif. I do think that there's a little bit of danger in romanticizing that united front because that has been an issue from the start, that our opposition was a loosely built coalition of people who kind of wanted similar things, but not really. And the cracks only became more and more obvious. And I feel like if we don't address that, we're going to keep coming back to this place.
I also wanted to say that I agree with Munif, I agree with you, but I wanted to draw Bridget's point earlier saying that Muda was the only campaign that ran on hope or that ran on anything positive. And the thing is, broadly speaking, and even with the united front that the opposition had, they were united in opposing Najib. That's actually what they were united in doing. And we can see now the effects of that, that years on, that narrative no longer holds that same strength and there hasn't been a sort of pivot away from it. Keep those thoughts coming. We still have more messages to get to. We'd like to hear from you in the wake of the Johor state election. What do you want to see from the opposition moving forward? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.